are not here to pay homage today. We are here to find out who has guts, who has pizzazz in their hands. Now I want to see those hands reach for the rafters of this beautiful church that you have bought for me. Now I want to see your hands, and then I want you to stand up, those who have guts, those who have pizzazz. Now I want you to stand up before me, and I want you to repeat after me, because it's going to take guts. It's going to take pizzazz on your part. Have you got guts? Have you got pizzazz? Then repeat after me. Good God, here comes the Colonel.
You're in the wrong studio. Religious charlatans are down the hall. Get out of here. All right, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. In just a minute, we're going to get back with Dan Arthur. But first, let's step over to our fountain of useless information for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, spirit of the fountain, we've thrown the coins in, and so you're going to help us with today's query. What Hollywood twosome resembling the battling Bogarts were dubbed the Poison Pens? Who was known in Hollywood as the Poison Pens?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the
One more time. The spirit of the fountain doesn't let us down. The Hollywood twosome resembling the battling Bogarts, dubbed the Poison Pens? Of course, Madonna and Sean Penn. All right, now back to today's guests. And now, with the prospect of natural gas becoming the cheap alternative to fire our electric power stations and to fire our automobiles and our fleets and that sort of thing, does it look now like solar and wind and some of these other alternatives are going to have to take a back seat again to an abundant, cheap energy? And that's the reason that there's these criticisms coming about, because of the investment that's in these things already?
You know, you ask a real good question, and to look at that, and I'm not sure that I have an exact answer, but what I will tell you is a few things that I do know. Is we've studied in depth the environmental cost of energy, and that's one of the things that that I think as a nation we really need to change how we think of energy. You know, we tend to think of energy on an individual basis, you know, or that you know, one thing is better than another, without really exploring the facts. So understanding, you know, the environmental costs of energy on a relative basis is key. So we can look at oil and gas and say we need to reduce impacts, we need to, you know, to make it more environmentally friendly. But really what I think is key is to compare different kinds of energy and say, hey, what is the disturbed acreage that, say, solar is going to have compared to wind, natural gas, oil, shale gas, coal, you know, so on and so forth. And what are the air impacts, and what are the water needs and uses and so forth. And when you start looking at things on that type of basis, what you find is that there's really no perfect energy. There's no single thing that you know, that rules the day. And what you find is different types of energy have their maybe advantages from an environmental cost perspective. And but if you start comparing, you know, a lot of these, you know, by disturbed acreage and air and visual impacts and noise impacts and all these things, natural gas turns out really well. And furthermore, when you start thinking about things like wind or even solar, I mean, people tend to think that they don't have impacts, or that alternative energies don't have environmental impacts, when in fact they do, or they're not perfect. So if you look at a state like Texas, who has a massive amount of wind energy generating facilities in place, as it turns out, those things aren't running very often. We want to think they run 100% of the time, but we put in a lot of money and a lot of infrastructure and have a lot of impacts, but they need things like natural gas to provide that energy that they, you know, are in place for when the wind's not blowing. When you get into solar, you have big, you know, surface impacts and wildlife impacts, and you know, and we'll need a lot of cooling water. And I mean, there's just so many things about every particular energy source or energy type that is a challenge. So, you know, I hope that as a country we can have an energy plan that considers these things on a relative basis, as opposed to the coal industry saying, hey, coal's better, we got clean coal, and you know, and on and on and on, when in reality we need to be looking at what serves us best, what we have an abundance of, what has a good environmental makeup, and natural gas comes out really high in a lot of those. And that's not to say that we don't need wind and we don't need solar and we don't need coal, but there's certainly a place for all of them. So hopefully we can discover as a country a happy medium and not try to bury competitive energy sources.
I hear what you're saying about the wind. I've been traveling by a motor vehicle up through the far northern Illinois back not too long ago, and here's this vast acreage of wind farms, and they're all sitting dormant. They're not turning. They're not doing anything. So you had mentioned that a lot of the wind farms are not being used very much, or kind of non-productive. That certainly brings to mind the question of why not. Do you have an answer?
Well, you know, I mean, they're based on wind. You know, it's the same thing with solar. I mean, we have night. They work with sunshine. There's certain areas that they work well in that has you know, maybe more sunshine or more wind. But the problem even there is that you can hope that you have these things you know, tuned up and working, but. The other thing that, you know, there's been a lot of studies on wind, for example, and one of the other things is when you start looking at the times of day when the wind is blowing versus the times of day when we use the most energy, and those don't necessarily match up. And that's one of the nice things about, you know, natural gas, is that when you need it, you turn it on, and it's there. And I think that there's a lot of potential for converting to power plants. You know, here in Tulsa, Apache just opened a new natural gas fueling station. I mean, you know, if we can move forward, I think to things that are complementary, you know, it'll be a positive thing. And you can look at even, you know, a guy like T. Boone Pickens, who has certainly, you know, got a whole lot more money than either one of us, and is a smart guy, and he pushed the wind thing for a while, and pretty much, you know, made the decision that, you know, look, this is not going to work.
He was pushing wind real hard back a few years ago. He was sending me emails almost daily about all these magnificent things he's doing with wind. And then the algae craze came along, and all this money invested in algae. But it looks like these energy sources are going to take a drastic backseat to natural gas, if the natural gas, everything we hear about natural gas continues. And that's why my question is prompted about, you know, is there a lot of fear manufactured to stymie the development of this natural gas in order to allow these other sources of energy to develop, or at least not fall by the wayside again, as they did after the 1970s with the advent of cheap oil?
Well, you know, there's certainly, I think, a lot of that. You know, I think that other things that people don't, that they don't realize is when you start looking at solar and the materials you need from solar, we get a lot of that from China. So there's imports, relative to alternative energies that we don't necessarily see, like we see in importing oil from places like Saudi Arabia. But irregardless of that, you know, the potential that we're seeing in natural gas right now, and this comes from a discussion I had with T. Boone Pickens the last time I met with him, is his thought was that, you know, really in a recovery in natural gas, you know, we're at a relatively modest rate in kind of the recovery factor, how much gas you get out of the ground versus how much is in there. You know, his prediction is that could double at least, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years. And if that's the case, you know, it takes that 200-year supply that you spoke of and makes it maybe a 400-year supply. So the potential upside here is phenomenal for us as a country. And if you were, you know, investing in a lot of other things, as President Obama is really pushing alternative energy right now, it's going to make, you know, that a tough thing to measure up to, and probably, you know, have a natural gas where it is not helping any. So certainly I'm sure there's a number of people out there that would prefer not to see natural gas do well. And I think if you look at some of the funding from some of the people that have perhaps been very vocal against natural gas, you can see that some of that is from groups that have been supporting other alternatives.
Wow, fascinating stuff. So I had somebody at Argonne National Labs tell me one time, she said, it's real simple, Colonel. It says, look at the money. And wherever the economic interests happen to be, that's where you're going to find the answer to the energy question. So you seem to touch on it there. You mentioned China just a little bit ago. I understand that you're working with the U.S. Department of Energy through an agreement between the United States and China to provide support relative to coal bed methane and shale gas development in China. Fill us in a little bit on that. What's going on there?
The Chinese have really vast coal resources. They have a lot of really great shale plays that are capable of producing both gas and oil. And as a country, if China can make use of those resources, it could really be beneficial. You know, they're highly dependent on coal. Their transportation for coal has generally been in trucks. If you've been there, you see, you know, many, many, many coal trucks on the highway. It's really awfully interesting. And what we've been doing through the DOE's Annex 3 agreement with China is really trying to help the Chinese hook up with U.S. Companies, both production companies and service companies and technology companies, to help them move forward with the development of their resources, and there's a lot of people that are doing that, and it's really going both ways. You know, if you look at here in Oklahoma, Chesapeake Energy has gotten investment investment partnerships with the Chinese for resources here in the U.S. And furthermore, companies you know, like Hess and others are working on deals to help the Chinese develop resources there. So it's there's really just a lot going on worldwide. And when you think of these unconventional resources, and we tend to look at them internally here just in the States, but the fact of the matter is that they are all over. So we're looking at stuff not only in China, but China, New Zealand, Poland, France, South Africa, I mean, you know, all over through Asia, just in so many places. It's really an interesting time in regards to energy.
Yeah, absolutely, and of course, the interest in China is that they're building a supposedly one new coal-fired power plant a day is what I heard a statistic about a year ago or so, and we're interested in not polluting the air with any more CO2. But how does natural gas compare with the CO2 emissions compared to some of the other sources that we use? Are we heading down a road the environmentalists are going to fight us on?
Well, let me mention two things. Is first, one of the interests that could be very beneficial in China relative to coal development is one of the things you have to do prior to mining coal is you have to, you may have to dewater the coal that you're mining, and you also have to, that coal may have natural gas in it, methane, that is often vented. So if you could produce and capture that methane, that coal bed methane or coal mine methane, before mining, one that could have an environmental benefit in the country of China, and provide them with some really well-needed energy potential. Now, if we look at energy production, you know, say natural gas versus coal, natural gas hands down is much better from say an air emission standpoint than a coal-fired plant. So I think that's you know, part of the reason why you're seeing a number of places looking at converting to natural gas over coal. And even if you look at places like Long Island that are using fuel oil and coal-fired plants in that area where they've had just really terrible air quality issues, you know, the transition to natural gas is something that's high on their priority list.
So if we're getting half of our electric power from coal, are these coal plants easily convertible to natural gas?
I'm not an expert in plant conversions, and I would say generally you're not necessarily converting a plant and its infrastructure from coal to natural gas. Moreover, you're probably looking at new natural gas plants, or if conversions, it's going to be really building another plant within that plant and using what infrastructure you can. So you still are going to have, you know, you've got a plant with a location, and there are certainly synergies there. But you know, but the two types of energy production work differently. So it's a pretty major deal.
Well, Dan, you're going to be speaking at the 4th Annual Green Technologies Conference, I believe dinner speaker, on the 19th of April, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. But I would bet that the subject's going to come up pretty quick, since it's an alternative green technologies conference, as to how natural gas is going to affect the industry of alternative energy. And it's probably going to have to be some questions that you're going to want to address and certainly be asked to address. Do you have a kind of a preview of what you plan to talk about at that dinner meeting?
Well, one of the things that I hope to do is to discuss a little bit about what we mentioned earlier, what I mentioned about the environmental cost of energy. So one of the things I hope to do is hopefully give people a little different perspective on how we evaluate energy and environmental costs of energy on a relative and comparative basis. So it's not something that we're typically used to, but it's something in a perspective that we've spent just a lot of time on in trying to understand and be able to answer those kinds of questions. So I think that's in part what I'm hoping to deliver during the meeting, and if I can do anything as an accomplishment during that, it will hopefully to be able to give people a little different perspective on how they see energy and environmental impacts.
All right, Dan, do you have a prediction for the future? I mean, this can be something light, or it can be something on subject, or it could be anything that you happen to think is pertinent. What do you put on the meditation cap here for a minute? Step into the meditation chamber a little bit and let your mind wander. And what do you see as a future prediction?
Well, first, my prediction for 2012 is that the Chicago Cubs will be the World Series champions. but beyond that, I think that what we're gonna see is a change over the next few years as we move into an environment where we have a real opportunity for energy independence that could be sustained for a very long time. I think that we're gonna start seeing a lot more transitions, a lot more technologies that are gonna come about that are gonna take advantage of not only natural gas but of the other resources we have in a combined basis. I really do not think that, you know, wind or solar or coal are just gonna go away. You know, we need all of those things, but you will be seeing, I think, having folks with natural gas vehicles and electric vehicles and a lot more, you know, homegrown energy, I think, is going to be a big point for the future. We're using more energy. It's critical to our success, I think, as a nation, and you know, really trying to squelch that American spirit is something I think is not going to happen. And through that, I think that it's, you know, we're going to have time with a lot of really smart people, researchers, regulatory agencies, and all that are going to go through this public process and evaluation, and I think there will be a merge of companies, regulators, the public that are going to find a happy medium on environmental issues, on natural gas, on unconventional energy and other things, so that we can move forward.
Almost a utopian view. Well, Dan Arthur, the registered professional petroleum engineer specializing in fossil energy and environmental issues, also founding member and president of All Consulting there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and a big advisor for the EPA and the Department of Energy and that sort of thing. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been really, really appreciate your insight. We look forward to seeing you in Tulsa on the 19th at that dinner at the IEEE Green Technology Conference. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you, Colonel.
All right, before we get to the Voice of Reason, we want to remind you that this award-winning program has been non-commercial since 2010 and wholly supported by independent interests in the emerging science community and contributions from listeners like you. It is your support that keeps public programs like this one on the air. Donations are gratefully accepted at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On behalf of the staff and management here at the Science News Radio Network, our deepest gratitude to those of you who've contributed. Thank you.
And now, we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I think one of the most profound lessons I go back to is I worked for Hewlett-Packard for 25 years, by the way. Had a wonderful time there through semiconductors and inkjet. But when I was a young member of technical staff, the vice president of human resources, I think we called it personnel then, said to us, gathered HP Labs, members of technical staff one day, says, you know, all of you are self-employed. And we're thinking, no, we're not. We're Hewlett-Packard employees. And he went on to elaborate, no, in the future, you may hold different jobs. This is 30 years ago, 33 years ago, and it's your job to make yourself competitive and to keep yourself current in technology. That's not our job, so that when change comes, you'll be prepared to deal with it. So in that sense, you're self-employed. You're selling your services, and right now we choose to buy them. That may or may not be the case in the future. And then just as a bonus, the same, that was John Doyle, who later was the vice president of the computer groups. Another thing that he taught us was the essence, I thought, of the old HP way, which is that a good manager has a soft heart and a hard head, or a hard head and a soft heart. And I think that's some of the most profound management advice I've ever heard. You can't fake, you know, caring about people and caring about what you're doing, and you also can't, you know, dodge the truth, you know, the hard truth, which is not always unpleasant, you know, about, you know, technical problems or business realities or anything else. So I've hung on to that for close to 35 years, that you need to have a hard head and a soft heart. Skip Rung, President and Executive Director of Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.